You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
By WTCM News Talk 580, welcome aboard. It's New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design in Traverse City, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Hey, it's great to be here. Ron, thank you so much. On December 7th, and you've already been talking about that date in history that will live in infamy. Every time I say that date, of course, you know, thinking about a huge history from 1941, I believe. The attack on Pearl Harbor, we're going to be talking about that a bit here later in the show. But sure appreciate you all listening. If you do have a question of a financial nature that we could possibly help with, we'd love to. And that information, if you would, Ron, is...
you can telephone us live, unless you're listening Saturday morning to the replay. 947-0023, 947-0023, that's the 231 area code. Or shoot us a message on the text line, 833-728-1140, 833-728-1140.
Joining us today, Heidi Cartwright, our own RICP, Retirement Income Certified Professional. And as I'm absentmindedly looking over there at the desk, there's this giant container of Christmas cookies.
They look awesome. They look delicious.
Holy cow.
That's from
ever distracting.
Trinity Lutheran's cookie sale is Saturday.
Really?
Saturday.
I'm doing a little coveting here, looking at that
kidding.
Bag of cookies by Ron.
Sorry, Heidi, I interrupted the intro with that. Yes, Managing Director, RICP, great to have you here with us, Heidi.
Oh, it's great to be here today, and it was great to see sunshine today.
It is very nice as well. And then Deanne Jennings joins us too. Welcome, Deanne, our Director of Operations.
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. Excited to be here with you.
Well, last week we talked about somebody who really messed up his financial life, both before and after he died, and James Caan, Sonny from the movie Godfather. So today, this week, we're talking about Mr. Charlie M. Munger.
Oh.
Munger. I don't think it's Charlie M. Munger. Just Charlie Munger. We'll call it that. He was the vice president in Berkshire Hathaway to Mr. Warren Buffett's company, Warren Buffett being the primary owner. Charlie, I guess you'd say, was a minority shareholder, although that still made him extremely wealthy compared to most of us. So he had incredible success, and we think it's worth discussing. Some of his axioms will go down. There's been a lot written about him just this last week, but we'll go down for some time. In terms of, there was an article a couple of days ago on the three things he wanted his children to remember, until their own 100th birthday. So there were some things he was intensely focused on: his family, his wife, their business, and also managing money. Well, he's got quite a history, and I thought it was worth all of us hearing because it's inspiring. And what a great time to be inspired. Now, before we move on, next week we're having John Sluice on talking about year-end tax planning. Mm-hmm. for those of you who have any time to do that. And then also to mention, on the 17th of January, we're starting up our Lunch and Learn classes again. I'm going to be talking about New Year's resolutions. That's January 17th. That's the third Wednesday in January. Wednesday, January. And it'll be from noon to 1. New Year's resolutions, and if we have time, some advanced planning techniques that you might take advantage of as well. So back to Charles Munger. Here's the article written by Rob, our economics friend, and I'm going to cover most of it here to, as an intro. A great man died last week at age 99. His name was Charlie Munger. He was an extremely intelligent man. He worked on his undergraduate degree at the University of Michigan, where he studied mathematics. In 1943, at age 19, he dropped out of college to serve in the U.S. Army Air Corps, where he became a second lieutenant. After receiving a high score on the Army General Classification Test, he was ordered to study meteorology at Caltech. After his stint with the military, Munger, through the GI Bill, took a number of advanced courses at several different universities. He then applied to Harvard Law School, but was rejected because he had not completed an undergraduate degree. After much persistence and effort, he was finally accepted. Munger excelled in law school, graduating magna cum laude with a JD in 1948, Juris Doctor. Munger was originally a lawyer by trade, but was always interested in the investment markets. On the side, he started his own investment firm in 1962. Over the following 13 years, his portfolio compounded by 19.8% per year versus a 5.0% annual average return for the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And I just wrote there as a quick note, that's about four times the return of the Dow. Not bad. Not bad by any measure. Anybody who beats the Dow, and or the S&P these days is counted as pretty smart. Munger first met Warren Buffett in 1959, and they liked each other immediately. Ironically, as a teen, Munger had a part-time job at Buffett and Son, a grocery store owned by Buffett's grandfather. Munger's thinking was the very definition of iconoclastic. His ideas could be quirky, but more often they simply cut to the quick, which was a perfect counterpoint to Buffett's way of thinking. The Munger-Buffett friendship grew, and in 1978, Charlie became vice chairman of Berkshire Hathaway. Did I say vice president earlier? Apologies. Vice chairman. A position that he held until he died. The Munger-Buffett friendship is a testimonial that individuals of different political persuasion can still be best friends. Munger was a libertarian Republican, Buffett a liberal Democrat. Now, Munger is credited with causing Buffett to change his investment approach of buying deeply undervalued and often low-quality companies. In fact, Buffett referred to them as old cigar butts. That's what he specifically referred to those companies as. An example of Munger's strategy of buying great companies at reasonable prices was Berkshire Hathaway's purchase of Apple in 2016. Now, not a bad time to buy. So long ago, right? Most people would say, 7 years? Something like that. 7 short years ago. Now, if you're going to double your money in 7 years, it means you need to get about a 10% rate of return. Okay? That's a rule of 72. About 10. 10 times 7. Well, at that time in 2016, I'm not sure what they paid for it. You know, I wasn't able to look up the cost basis Berkshire paid for it, but I looked up 2016 for Apple. It was trading in the range of about $25 a share.
Wow.
Today, 200.
Yeah.
Well, that's about an 8 times dollar amount. 25 to 200, thank you very much, not bad. So if it had grown to $50, that'd be a 10% annualized. Now, I didn't figure out what that rate of return is. I don't even want to guess. It's huge. Anyway,
it's a lot.
8 times the money. Thank you very much. So Munger was credited with getting Buffett interested in buying Apple. And it's been an enormously successful investment. It now represents close to 50% of the market value of Berkshire's stock investment portfolio. So what's the axiom, the thing we want to gain from that in terms of investment? Munger's emphasis on fundamental strength identifies companies with clean balance sheets, one, low capital intensity, that means they don't need to borrow money to continue to operate, that provide the financial durability and optionality which is optimal for long-term growth. Fundamental strength, companies, high profitability, stable profitability, number two, and low leverage. Those are the big three. High profitability, stable profitability, and low leverage. Any examples, anyone? Microsoft maybe come to mind.
Microsoft.
Maybe Google.
Yeah.
Perhaps Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So those companies exist out there. And those tend to be extremely successful, especially if you can buy them at a fair price. Now, that can be a challenge these days, all right? Can be a challenge. Google, some would say, was relatively conservatively valued, even on today's markets. Who knows? Charlie also believed in lifetime learning, with a great emphasis on learning through reading. Shown below are some of his quotes on that subject. Now, Charlie, there was a great article by Jason Zweig in the Wall Street Journal about Charlie. He actually interviewed him extensively months before Charlie passed away. And it was incredibly insightful. I mean, he lived and breathed. I'll just read a short excerpt. As he spoke, and this is during the interview that Zweig had with Munger when he sat with him in his home. "I soaked up the surroundings," says Zweig, realizing I'd never have another chance to interview him. To Munger's left sat a small wooden table with two oversized and worn Valuline binders. That old Valuline, you know how that is basically newspaper copy.
I remember those. And one of my jobs at one of the financial firms I worked for was I'd get them in the mail and you'd have the binder and you had to take it out and put in the new edition as they came in. And
every 13 weeks they update, if my memory serves, and you have to replace that portion of those companies that they've reviewed, take out the old one, and slip in the new one to the binder. Okay? Relatively simple practice. So Valuline binders featuring details of various companies, extreme detail. I mean, you can really go in very quickly on one page and find out an incredible amount of information about that company. Mm-hmm. Munger said he relied on these relics of a bygone era to evaluate new investments. They're easy to navigate, and you get a good overview of companies, he explained. Now, Munger was a wordsmith. He believed in lifetime learning with a great emphasis on learning through reading. Imagine that. Shown below are some of his quotes on that subject. There is, first one, "There is no better teacher than history in determining the future." It doesn't always repeat itself, but some say it rhymes. "There are answers worth billions of dollars in a history book." Two. Three, "I constantly see people rise in life who are not the smartest, sometimes not even the most diligent, but they are learning machines. They go to bed every night a little wiser than they were when they got up."
That's a goal.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah.
Especially for 2024, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm amazed at age 64. Been thinking about this somewhat. Honestly, about how much more of the world there is to learn. It's just incredible. But it's a wonderful challenge as well to think about. You know, the more study, learning from others, associating with those who, frankly, are geeks, as we do with Ed Slott. I'm just thinking of examples, perhaps. Ed is an incredible motivating force in our lives because of the information that they disseminate. It's incredible. So that's one good example. "In my whole life," next quote from Charlie, "in my whole life, I've known no wise people who didn't read all the time. None. Zero."
Mm-hmm.
Next, "develop into a lifelong self-learner through voracious reading. Cultivate curiosity and strive to become a little wiser every day." Next, "if you keep learning all the time, you have a huge advantage." Huge. Last, or close to last, I wouldn't even say last, "I met the towering intellectuals in books, not in a classroom. Hmm. Not in a classroom. Another one. The big money is not in the buying and the selling, but in the waiting. Here's some more. There isn't a single formula. You need to know a lot about business and human nature and the numbers. It is unreasonable to expect that there is a magic system that will do it for you. I remember starting our own office and getting some advice. I will never forget. I read an article about, you know, what makes a successful financial advisor, just putting it into personal again. And the three things that were tended to be emphasized were, number one, write articles about it, helping people with information. It'll not only help them, but it'll help yourself too. It'll help you gain knowledge and information about your craft. Ron Jolly has written a bit, hasn't he?
Not about the craft, but I've written a bit.
Yes,
I
you
still
have,
write.
Sir. Indeed.
Yeah.
So it teaches a lot in mm-hmm. the process. It really does. Yeah. Some of it fun, some not so. Two, speak publicly. Yeah. The thing that you fear the most, do. All right? That was those were the two biggies in writing and speaking on a continuing basis. Next, the best thing a human can do is to help another human know more. It's inspiring. I was talking with one of the staff people this morning about the amount of information that we need to continue to disseminate to our clients about taking QCDs and RMDs and finishing this off, helping them get this all done. Mm-hmm. It's a continuing thing. Here's a great one. People calculate too much and think too little. Huh. And this may be my favorite. Get really good at destroying your own wrong ideas. I almost don't like to say the word wrong. Get really good at destroying your own wrong ideas. That's one to cogitate on. Here's one that's probably a second favorite. A great business at a fair price is far superior to a fair business at a great price. So looking for diamonds in the rough, usually a fool's errand. All right? Because they only tend to get rougher. I believe in the discipline of mastering the best that other people have ever figured out. I don't believe in just sitting down and trying to dream it all up myself. You know, there's a lot of street knowledge that we can gain. Incredible from those who are experts in other fields as well. Some of the real estate I've got from a friend, I'm not going to mention him, but was amazing on, on real estate values and really what to look for. He's had, 40, 45 years in the industry and the business. He's now retired. But just having conversations with him, and which he loves to share. You must force yourself to consider opposing arguments, especially when they challenge your best loved ideas. Charlie was a real techno geek, if you will. He was a geek. You must force yourself to consider opposing arguments. That's not easy, is it?
It's not. And I think that's really important right now because people get so entrenched in their yep. view. But if you force yourself to consider the other side, it can really expand your understanding and I think that's just really important right now.
Some people might call that marriage or active listening. Thank you, guys. So you have a different opinion on that, yes. Well, tell me, if you can actively listen, why do I get so stinking preachy? I mean, I'm trying to apologize. I'd rather apply it to my own. I need to apologize anyway. To my personal life with being married and actually actively listening to what she's saying. And then actually maybe even repeating it, that's active listening. It's difficult. It doesn't mean that you have to agree with them. Just actively listen, and perhaps you or I will learn something in that process. Part of what you must learn is how to handle mistakes. Embrace the mistakes. You're not learning anything if you're not making mistakes. Look at that, Ron. See, I highlighted that one.
That one is highlighted. I'll vouch for that, yes.
You're not learning anything if you're not making mistakes. And so there's some great axioms. And he was giving away, in all this process, hundreds of millions of dollars away of his estate to educational institutions, including U of M. So he was actively involved.
He made a lot, and he gave away a lot.
He did. Yep. During his lifetime, which I think is awesome. That's the beauty of seeing, to me, the full circle of that kind of wealth and what we can do ourselves, perhaps. It doesn't have to be millions, but here we are at the end of the year. Expand your horizons, perhaps, a bit in terms of your own giving. And I'll challenge that to us all. With that, with the intro to Deanne, she's got some stats related to billionaires, given that Charlie was one of them. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about those, please.
Yes. Heidi brought to our attention a great article from Investment News. It's entitled, Billionaires Acquiring More Wealth Through Inheritance Than Entrepreneurship, says UBS. And this report is focused on the last year highlights that impact the great wealth transfer. And this article is by Steve Randall. The much-talked-about great wealth transfer is underway among the richest families, according to a new report. The UBS Billionaire Ambitions report found that billionaires acquired more wealth in the last year from inheritance than from entrepreneurship. The first time this has been the case in 9 editions of the annual research, which would be 9 years. This is a theme we expect to see more over the next 20 years as more than 1,000 billionaires pass an estimated of $5.2 trillion to their children, said Benjamin Cavalli, head of strategic clients at UBS Global Wealth Management.
They better be doing some estate planning, eh?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a ton of tax.
So much.
Yeah, the tax rate for estates in those ranges, if it were just purely applied, is about 45 to 50% so. So that's a pretty good haircut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that our hope to get out of debt as a country?
If they can collect it and it's not given away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Global billionaire wealth partially recovered in the 2022-2023 period as billionaires with consumer and retail businesses in Europe recovered after falling by almost a fifth in the previous 12 months. There was a 7% increase in the number of billionaires globally in the last year, 7%, increasing from 2,376 to 2,544, and their wealth recovered by 9% from $11 trillion to $12 trillion.
Somewhere in the range of the stock market as well as bonds. It's pretty interesting. It's nothing astounding in terms of a rate of return, of course, and it pretty much mirrors what's happening in the markets this year so far.
The Global Report published Thursday found that 53 heirs inherited almost $151 billion, while 84 self-made billionaires made just shy of $141 billion.
So for the first time ever?
Ever. That,
it's interesting. More, so yeah. $10 billion short or so.
Mm-hmm. Most heirs, 68%, say they plan to continue what their parents achieved in business, brand, or assets, and plan to ensure that they, too, will have a strong financial legacy to pass on to future generations of their family. Around one-third said they will continue their parents' philanthropic goals. But that doesn't mean simply mirroring what has gone on before, as there will be a sharp focus on new technologies, the clean energy transition, and impact investing. Meanwhile, first-generation billionaires are aware of this, with 58% claiming their greatest challenge will be instilling the necessary values, education, and experience for their heirs to take over. That kind of reminds me of Charlie Munger.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
He talked about that extensively in terms of his own children and trying to train them as they trained them up as they came along.
As well as seizing new opportunities, billionaires are well aware of risks, including U.S. recession, 68% of first-generation billionaires are concerned about this, and inflation, 57% of heirs are concerned about that as well. On AI, both sets of billionaires cite both opportunity and risk from fast-growing tech.
And that's really interesting, you know, some of the stuff that we worry about. They're worrying about it, and you just think, wow, they're just so far out of the league that where we are, but they're worrying about some of the same issues that we are.
Exactly.
And the impact.
on what they do. Mm-hmm.
They put on their pants one leg at a time.
Amazing.
It's incredible, yes. Mm-hmm. So they're human as well. Mm-hmm. Speaking, is that it, Deanne?
That's it.
All right,
that's
thank you. Speaking of humanity, there was a great article in this morning's Fox News about Taylor Swift and some of the things that she's encountered, the headwinds that she's had to face, given that she's, is it Time's Person of the Year?
I think she might be a billionaire now, too.
Yeah, she is, according to the stats. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating to read what they said about the amount of training she had to do for this concert series, this Eras tour. She trained, they said, for 6 months to get ready for it on the treadmill as well as on dancing. So she was incorporating her music. She said she wanted to learn the music, the songs so well that she could interact with the audience without having it detract. To overthink it. So she wanted to learn it backwards and forwards. And the amount of time she spent in the training part of it was just incredible to realize that it just didn't happen. Who was talking about that? Dave Ramsey was talking about that. He said, how many football players that come off the Super Bowl team say, well, you know, when they're interviewed, how did you do this? They don't say, well, I just got off the bus, you know, jumped on the team. You know, they don't do that. The extensive training that obviously goes into that, and many times behind-the-scenes sorts of things that they have to do to accomplish that sort of level of play.
For a concert tour, I've read where the roadies and the tech guys, they'll be in a large building to rehearse. They'll set the whole stage up, set up the lights, plug in the instruments, do a sound check every day, and then tear it down and pack it back into a truck. And get up the next day and do it over and over, just as the artists rehearse their steps and their songs, so that when they go on tour, you know, that's a lot of work to methodically break down and set up a concert.
Oh, is it ever?
Yeah. I never thought about that.
Oh, my gosh, so I didn't know that. Yeah, yeah, because the Rick Stewart being just in, I've watched him work their systems, the technology and the sound systems. He's an absolute expert at that. Hmm. In fact, he consults around the nation, but the amount of work that goes into setting up those systems to make certain that in the audience, we're all hearing what's actually being played up front. It's a lot of work. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Ron, thank you. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to note, too, some of the other things from the articles that we were reading about Charlie. And about how much more time do we have here, Ron?
5 minutos.
Awesome. So great. So in terms of what some of the things I'm trying to get to it here, we wanted to talk about for Charlie is simply perhaps doing your own research about some of the axioms that Charlie had, some of the things that he was interested in, and also thinking about what we do in terms of hiring money managers within a firm. Obviously, they're not going to win all the time, but what are those firms that have that kind of a history? How do they migrate this economy today? Do they have a team that they're working with? The very best groups that we, and they're well known, that manage money specifically tend to do so as teams. They have obviously an education mindset. They're interviewing these companies on an ongoing basis. They're working together. They're very collaborative with other individuals within their firm. Most often, they have a significant decades of experience. 15, 20, 25 years is the norm. I'm thinking of a specific company that does this, but they have 6 to 8 money managers for each of the mutual funds that they manage. Their average tenure at this company is 25 years. And they also give a portion of the funds to the research side of the business as well. So those who are specializing in the research side also get a portion of the funds. So it's a very, they work together in trying to find the best values over time related to trying to improve people's situations.
Do you think that AI will have an influence in that part of the industry, especially the research?
That's interesting. In terms of processing information, that wouldn't be a surprise. Yeah. As long as it's like anything else, garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah.
And we've heard how when AI is writing term papers and that sort of thing, how it randomly picks up inaccurate information. So it can be helpful, like anything else, and dangerous at the same time. It's kind of like riding a bicycle. We'll have to learn what's real and what isn't.
And, you know, today on Fox Business News, they had a piece on AI and medicine. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting because, you know, I think we have a fear factor with AI because we don't understand it and we it's all new. Watch The Terminator or something like that. But they were talking about how quickly the machines can look at scans and identify cancer like 5 years earlier than a doctor could, or 2 to 3 times better, and how combining that with a human and the machine is where you can find your best result, because the machine can weed out certain things and bring forward the concern points, and then having a doctor collaborate with that information. And I thought it was really interesting because, you know, you worry about a human not being involved. But if we can figure out the collaboration, I think there is a lot of possibility out there. We just have to learn how to deal with what we've created and have some guidelines. Mm-hmm.
I agree. I wrote it down as you were talking. I call that fuzzy logic. The numbers on a company can be fantastic. But if these people are interviewing a company, which they have incredible access because they're managing billions of dollars, and they don't like a response to a certain question, you're not going to be able to quantify that from AI. You simply, what's the feeling I get from that company and having gone into the offices and talked to these people? Are they on the up and up? How were their answers? What were the non-seeable things? What's the gut level? That sort of thing, I think, is where AI can help us. And help improve us, but also be aware of its weaknesses, too. And with that, that's the show, Ron. Thank you.
That will wrap up another edition of New Retirement Radio. From Prout Financial Design, Traverse City, Michigan, Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, Deanne Jennings, thank you all.